Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at our website, stevebick.com. I had to clear my throat. I'm fighting off. It's funny. I feel fine, but I'm sure everybody has different little tells. when you know you're fighting something off. I think I'm fighting something off. I told Tina last night. A little throaty, but it's funny. I feel fine. Usually, if I start to get like kind of tingly in the arms and shoulders, that's usually for me. That's usually the tell. But I've got a little, not a great thing to. When you're talking 3 hours a day, it's not great when you got something gurgling around in your throat. So if I put the mute button on and disappear for a couple of beats at a time, that's what it is. As opposed to the people who comment how frequently, apparently, I haven't seen one of these in a while. That I. Have too many pregnant pauses. I'm sure there's people that would love it if there were more. Got a bit of an eclectic morning, actually, because of course it's Happy Valley, another Happy Valley Wednesday. You do not want me to sing. It's one of the great frustrations of my life that I. It's so funny because people always say, "Oh, you have you got the speaking voice," but it's strictly limited to speaking voice. It doesn't venture out into singing voice. Although I'll tell you how hopeless I was in that front. A girlfriend that got me because she knew I wanted to at least try to learn how to sing. She had a girlfriend of hers who was a real singer and gave lessons. And so she said, "I'm going to pay for lessons for you." So I went the first time and she said, "Don't bother. This is you're hopeless." A bunch of eclectic things going on here for midweek, and I still got a couple of results that I haven't even gotten to yet, which is not unusual because, I'm like I'm like your 6-year-old with ADD. I was just like so easily distracted. We got some sale results. I got to slip in some sale results, and it was a good day yesterday at Keeneland, so we'll touch on that. Dick Powell is going to roll in here, as I mentioned. Started a hint that it's a nice Happy Valley Wednesday morning. Later, we're actually going to move Tony up. We're going to flip-flop Anthony Black. We're going to flip-flop Tony and Sid, because Sid, as it turns out, is getting on a plane. He attended the first 2 days of the sale and is flying back to Tampa. So he's either in the airport now or boarding a plane now. And we'll get Sid in tomorrow, which is actually fine because the sale will be 3/4 done. And then he can kind of, provide his perspective. There is one piece of news, and I'm sure I'll bring it up as well with Sid tomorrow. Not that it's going to matter here to us domestically, but Hot Rod Charlie is going to head to Japan. Yeah, and there's actually a little bit of this that yesterday, if you heard when we were talking about the Generazio dispersal. You actually, Jessica Martini, I thought, hinted at something that plays into this discussion, which is Hot Rod Charlie's own pedigree, which is fine, but by Oxbow. And so, you know, in terms of the attractiveness and the you know, the domestic flashiness of, you know, his potential here, you know, maybe a little, no, tarnished isn't the right word, just a little less glittery than, you know, some of the other current avant-garde, au courant pedigrees. So Hot Rod Charlie retired and headed to Shidai Stallion Station in Japan for 2023. He was an interesting horse, Hot Rod Charlie, and he seemed to be in the center of one. I don't want to say controversy, but it just seemed like he was constantly involved in a hullabaloo. How about that? Hullabaloo? Is that does that fit, right? He was in the center of the action repeatedly, Hot Rod Charlie. So that news came to the fore yesterday, actually, right as we were getting off the air. A little bit after I saw the GDN alert. Well, Doug O'Neill did a nice job. Maybe won five times. And, of course, the whole boat racing story that was involved with this, they were so much fun, you know, to have around. And, you know, they brought a lot of fun to the atmosphere. And hopefully, you know, they go on with it, too. And a bunch of young guys, and so ends up here $5.6 million in earnings, and you know, that included the interesting Lucas Classic confrontation with Rich Strike, and you know, you go back to the, you know, all the way back to the Haskell, and he what else did he win besides the? Well, in fact, you know what? I should put that up. I've got to go. I'll dig into my phone. I've got a little video from Parks when he won the Pennsylvania Derby, and they were the team was all up in the viewing area, and it was pretty cool. And I got them as they paraded down, and you know, you go out of down a pair of stairs, and it spills you out right on the track apron. It makes it easy to get to the winner's circle. And I'll put that up. It's kind of fun. So anyway, Hot Rod Charlie. So long. I just printed up. I hadn't printed out his PPs, and second to Essential Quality off of his maiden win, going back to his juvenile season. Then came back in the Bob Lewis behind Medina, and wow, Roman Centurion, forgotten name, wins the Louisiana Derby, third in the Kentucky Derby. And then, of course, actually moved up, don't forget. And second in the Belmont to Essential Quality. Wins the Haskell, wins the Pennsylvania Derby. Fourth in the Nixco Breeders' Cup Classic, where he kind of loomed and just kind of got late on us. Dubai last year, second behind Country Grammar. Lucas Classic, and then kind of a non-factor really in the in his final career start. So nice career though. Hot Rod Charlie off to Japan, and we'll see what Sid thinks and how much you know, the appeal and how that pedigree might play abroad. A couple of things to mention. Dick Powell, I'm going to reach for Dick momentarily. We are going to get a visit from somebody who we always appreciate when we get a chance to talk to him. We're going to have a little bit of a life celebration. And in fact, there's several people that we could reach out to thinking about it now. Virginia Kraft Payson passed away at the age of 92 at the farm at Payson Stud. And she had been ailing. She's a remarkable. She was an absolutely larger than life figure. And I mean, really, even the last few years, you would occasionally, you know, see a you know, quote and pieces of, you know, and people still were seeking her for comment and interviews. You know, we think of her mostly, I mean, if you're a certain age, you know, we just think of her as Payson Stud and Payson Park and you know, her involvement around the game. But as a young woman, you know how much I gush over Mrs. De Tomaso, Isabel Haskell De Tomaso, for being, I mean, just a, you know, the daring debutante, as I think we've called her in the past, and, you know, who raced open wheel Le Mans race cars. To Amory Haskell's chagrin. Virginia Kraft Payson was a absolute pace setter, you know, firebrand, whatever you want to call her. She was one of the original staffers of Sports Illustrated. Yeah, and she had the eclectic beat, essentially. I mean, sort of the, you know, some of those sportsman, you know, the sportsman columns, for those of you that are a certain age, that, you know, I mean, there isn't, I can't imagine, this is a broad generalization. In fact, I'm going to call Dick now, because I'm curious for his take on this. I'm going to guess there isn't, I mean, I'm 63, and I'm going to guess that anybody within about 15 years of my age, plus or minus, are going to agree with this statement. And we say good morning, Dick Powell, first of all. Dick, there we go. Here's the statement, Dick, if you've been listening. Is there any buddy listening within the sound of my voice that did not have a subscription to Sports Illustrated at some point in their life? I'm 63, and I'm going to venture that everybody up at least to about 45 listening, maybe even 40, had a subscribed to Sports Illustrated at least for a year. Yes, no, agree, don't agree?
I still get it, Steve.
Well, there you go. Okay. I stopped a long time ago. I had the sports periodicals, Sports Illustrated, Sport Magazine, which I loved. Absolutely, yes. Loved. Dick Schaap, out of this world. The Sporting News, which, yes, was, I mean, before USA Today. If you wanted statistics, if you wanted a, you know, you wanted at bats and stats and everything, you had to get Sporting News and box scores and the Hockey News, for those of us that are purveyors of the puck. Hockey news was indispensable. But Sport and Sports Illustrated, and I'm talking about Virginia Kraft Payson, who, you know, there was that period, Dick, in the 50s, 60s, into the 70s, where Sports Illustrated gave real, you know, credence and attention to hunting and fishing and the sporting life.
Yeah, and she covered all that stuff, but I'm weird. I read, like, if I'm on a trip, I'll buy National Geographic and I read it cover to cover. So I read every story, whether I'm interested in that subject or not. And then Sports Illustrated would come, and there'd be stories on things that I might not particularly be interested in, but I would always read those type things. And she was one of their top writers for hunting, fishing, and she did all that stuff herself.
Yes.
It wasn't like they sent her out there. And she wound up standing Car de NASCAR. Well, she raced Car de NASCAR. And then she wound up standing Car de NASCAR in New York at Sugar Maple Farm. And she had a long, prosperous relationship with the New York breeding program.
Very much.
And had lots of good horses. But Car was trained by Wayne Lucas. And a horse who, you know, was mostly New York breds, but he could get into open company. He ran in the Jim Dandy. I'm trying to draw my memory. Ran in the Jim Dandy as the odds-on favorite, and I think it was a four horse field, and he was terrible, just god awful. So they brought him back in the Travis. I'm trying to draw my memory a little harder to make sure I got this right. And he ran into Travis against Rhythm and brought in Gary Stevens and just was a terrific third. Now, it wasn't the greatest Travis of all time because it was the Travis that Rhythm won. 15, 16 Osfield, this wasn't, you know, no superstars, but he wound up being third in that race. And nice horse.
Well, and I started to explain that we were going to be able, you know, due to her passing, to be able to bring the one and only Tom Skiffington. The Skiff Dog will join us after Dick, and he trained for Mrs. Payson, and then of course, you know, being in proximity to Payson Park as Tommy is down in Wellington, be a perfect the perfect guest. I mean, there's so many people that we could reach out to, and of course, Roger Atfield trained for, and you know, anybody that has been at Payson Park for any period of time, Bill Mott and Chris Clement and so forth, they all, you know, until Parkinson's really started to hobble her, an amazing woman, author of half a dozen books, you know, she was one of those jet setting types that that just led a fascinating life, and the trailblazer was the word I was reaching for earlier that took a while to come to me, but
forget about what I just said about Car de NASCAR. I'm thinking about another horse.
All right. Well, we weren't gonna question you.
And one of the people that I would associate with her horses was, I think, Jimmy Bond had
Le Carrière.
Quite a few.
Le Carrière is the one that comes to mind. The first horse of hers that I sort of remembered or became enamored with was Lac We Met.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, she also she transitioned to a degree into a commercial breeding operation at a certain, and I'm not sure what juncture it happened, but you know, she bred Vindication among others, among other nice prominent horses. So she had a, you know, she had a successful transition into that arena, into the sales side of it too. I mean, just the is one of those people that is kind of out of central casting from a certain, the second half of the century when it comes to our game.
Yeah, and I thought Vindication was just going to be a monster.
He was going to be a monster.
Well, but I thought he'd be even better than he was. I thought he was the next big thing, as they say.
Well, we certainly over the years with Satish, we always enjoyed conversation. He loved talking about Vindication. One of his, you know, it's funny with all the success. As much as he wanted, you know, Satish is of course the one of the poster owners for, you know, for going after the Derby, but then having all this other success away from the Derby. Just everything but, including Vindication as an example. Yeah, I mean, Satish won a bunch of Breeders' Cup races, but you know, couldn't get the Derby. I'm just seeing she also bred Farda Amiga, who I absolutely loved.
She won the Alabama and Kentucky Oaks, I believe, and just a boatload of.
She was tremendous.
Ones.
I mean, she that was, of course, I think for a lot of people domestically, our first introduction to Paulo Lobo. Now we've got Paulo Lobo 2.0.
Yes,
he's back, but you know, the Farda Amiga was the. You know, she was a terror that that year, 2002, and it took Azari. I mean, she might have finished her career with three straight wins. It was only Azari that derailed her in the Breeders' Cup distaff.
And she was owned by a Brazilian group, and the lead guy was José de Camargo. And I was doing some business, and he was the contact in Brazil, and he knew his stuff. But he would call me, and his accent was so thick, and I would hold the phone back when you had real phones. I'd hold it so close to one ear, I felt it was coming out the other ear, because I didn't want to miss anything. And then after a few minutes, you get used to the rhythm and cadence and stuff like that, and then it was fine. But in the beginning, he'd call me, and I'm like, oh no. I hope the beginning is all niceties, because hope he doesn't have any important stuff to say in the first few minutes. But him and his family, they were in the winner's circle with the Brazilian flag and the chant and Farda Amiga, and they were a lot of fun.
Well, and then I think was it his son or is it a brother that also went on? Should you know what that should get Paulo Lobo, one of the really, I'd be curious what. You know what his thoughts are about what's going on at home in Brazil.
I heard a very good analysis of it last night with the woman who was reporting from the street, and and then a columnist, and it was not quite what we're getting in the mainstream media, but it was. There's a big problem between the military and the military police, and hopefully somehow that doesn't boil over.
Well, I will.
And they were doing searches on, I guess the protesters are having these barbecues and staying in hotels. So they were like looking at who was financing. Who bought all this meat and who paid for all these hotel rooms and stuff. So.
Well, somehow George Santos probably intersects in this. Dick,
I would have said his last name begins with an S and ends with an S.
That's okay. You can go right ahead.
Be Santos.
It's all right. The eighth race. Okay. Well, the eighth here. Let's slip in and get a handle on Happy Valley while we got a shot.
All right. Sylvester D'Souza just won his fourth race of the night. And obviously having a big night. Zach Purton been in a slump. But he did break it in the second race this evening. So he broke that little two-week schneid. And heading into the ninth, which we'll get to in a second. There was a group. Free stake race in race seven tonight called the January Cup. And it was route horses going a mile and an eighth. And Money Catcher was put up near the pace by D'Souza. He fought off a challenge early from Red Majesty. And then once he was on the lead, race was over. I mean, he just kept going and finding more. Won, but by, you know, when you win by a length, that's a pretty decisive margin in Hong Kong. So he won by a length as the favorite. Son of Furlock. You know, there's still Steve. Remember last week that gold baby beat me? Came from far off the pace up the rail, beat me in that one race.
Yes.
Well, gold baby is by Warrior's Reward. Stands in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
One of their better sires. And he has this horse, Australian bred, and Gold Baby has turned into this monster horse that keeps beating me. And but I wanted to get the Warrior's Reward in for our Pennsylvania horse breeders. So he had a nice winner the other day at my expense. Money Catcher wins race seven tonight, and D'Souza just backed it up with another one in race number eight. Sunday, we had interesting card at Sha Tin. We had some dirt races, and Chen Cheng Prince is probably the best dirt horse on the grounds. Was dismissed as the third choice, but he won pretty handily for Francis Loy and Juan Maya. That was on the dirt track. They call it all weather or dirt. Then they had a 5-furlong Group 3 sprint down the straightaway. It drew a field of 14. And I swear, every horse with any kind of gate speed that's not being pointed for this next big race on January 29th entered this race. Because it's just unbelievable the way the pace was. Now, the winner might be a record. The winner paid $13.10, and he was the favorite. So he had a favorite win, and he paid $13.10 to win. Don't see that every day. And the betting was so spread out because we had 6.5 to 1, 9 to 1, 10 to 1, 12 to 1, 8.4, 6.7, 8.4, 8.7, 9.7. So you can like a horse, but there's lots of other horses to like. I lucked out. I had sight success based on his previous race when he got run down by Wellington, but looked good doing it. And in this race, Wagner Borges has been, I don't know how to describe it, ice cold with his riding. He comes up the inside, perfect ride, wins by a nose, over rewarding together. So I get the $13 horse. Now, last week, we also talked about a horse, and a form line was through someone called Nordic Dragon. And I said, Nordic Dragon is 2 for 2, looks like the next big thing. And that kind of analysis helped us in the race we were looking at. Well, now, here comes Sunday. Guess who's in the 10th race? Nordic Dragon. So old Dickie here, he goes pick three, Sight Success, single, which is a courageous move in a 14-horse field as spread out wide open as it was. Sight Success. I get through him. I got the all button in the last race, and I need Nordic Dragon. Turns for home. Looks like a winner. Comes up empty. I mean, just you could just see the gas tank go burp down the E. So he's out, and as Paul Harvey would say, you know the rest of the story, because 30-1 shot wins the last race. So I somehow, no, I did a win bet, place bet on Sight Success. I made money, not complaining, but the big one got away.
That's what we play. That's why we dig our heels in. And I do want you to provide a ninth race play. We got 18 minutes to post. Monday, did you hear John White in hour three?
No, I had you on at one point, but no, I did not.
Well, John's back, and we've got him. He was live for a big score and did some at Santa Anita and did some insurance purchasing. And it occurs to me, you know, given your approach and the opportunities that, you know, that you've had to close out sequences over the years, what's your policy and what do you recommend, particularly, you know, fledgling players, how they approach the insurance concept, covering uncovered horses when you're alive for, you know, modest or more than modest scores?
Well, first you got to have the resources to do it. So
that's a good point. Good point.
It's easy to say, oh, what did you hedge? What did you do this? Well, you got to have money in your account, whatever it is, to do it. So that's the first thing. Second, do it in a way that is going to guarantee you money. In other words, don't leave out a couple of horses because you don't think they're going to win, and then they win, and now you've wasted even more money with your insurance purchase. So take the odds, kind of reverse engineer them so the 30-1 bet less, the 10-1 you don't have bet more, you know, just stuff like that. Figure it out. I advocated, and I listened to sports gambling shows. Not 24/7, but I do get to sleep. But that's what I have on. And these people about hedging. And they're like, oh, I never hedge. You just throw away your money. Oh, I never hedge. I'm like, are you allergic to money? You have some. Like, what is wrong with you? But it's this big macho thing. So don't believe that hype. If you have a chance to protect what you did. Now, I give an example. A couple of years ago, I'm sitting at Saratoga. I'm alive in the pick five. And there's like six horses. One of them is going to pay maybe $1,600. And what I did was I just guaranteed about a $400 profit by betting the other five proportionally. So no matter who wins, I win. But if, and I actually happen to be Todd, if Todd wins, I get $1,600. So I jumped at it. I got a chance to lock in a profit and still have the opportunity to make the money. Yeah. So I would do it, and I would also practice it to try to get better at it, not to leave things out and make mistakes. But boy, there's nothing worse. And here's like a Road to Damascus type moment here, Steve. We have a lot of people that want to lose. They want to tell bad beat stories. They can't wait to see you and say, oh, you wouldn't believe what happened. You know. And if that's you, I would buy 1 year treasuries or, you know, something like that that's returning decent money. Because you shouldn't be gambling. And I know a lot of people that are like that. So not only do they have this macho crap in their head about, you know, they don't do that, but they're also psychologically, if they do not hedge and lose, still not a total loss, because now they get to tell your bad beat story.
That's pretty good.
The late Warren DeSantis, God rest his soul, was the bad beat king. I mean, Warren had bad beat stories. You'd be crying, you know, telling you about this and that. I mean, some of them were just can't happen, but it did happen. It happened to him. And I said, you know, Dr. Melfi would say, you don't want to win these races. you want to lose by a nose, stuff like that. So one day, he's given someone the whole litany of bad beat stories, which I've heard a million times. So I said, well, why don't you tell that Arlington Millions story? Well, 1 year, if anyone remembers, Powers Court
got
taken down.
Yep.
And Warren got put up with a 44-1 shot, I believe. And he had it, I mean, six figures. And is watching the race with his wife. And his wife says to him, you know, after they changed the order, well, isn't that you? And he starts denying it because he doesn't want her to know. He just wants to hold it. So he's like, No, I had it different way. And she had him cold. I mean, he finally had the fess up that he had. So even when he won, he was trying to weasel his way out of it.
Well, and that was I can't remember. There was the two incidents in fairly close proximity, right? There was Powers Court's DQ, and then there was Stevens. Who was it? Which million was it that Stevens hanging on, sliding off the neck? Oh, for goodness sakes. Wow.
Year or two later?
It was in proximity of that, without a doubt. And I, you know, one of my favorite, it's funny, one of my favorite memories when it comes to the Arlington Million was how we used to have to watch it. It used to be the letter designated race in the program, right? At Saratoga, it would be the one race we could bet on, you know, out of town, you know, before there was widespread simulcasting.
Yep.
And I can remember, you know, because I used to spend the days in the upper carousel, and Teresa, you know, used to have a table, and then you'd go into that, you know, that big open area right there behind the grandstand seats and, you know, pretty, you know, near the end of, even at the end of the, that section of the grandstand and watch them. And I can remember watching Awad win in 90, whatever. And Mecki too. And Mecki was, I want to say, one of the two was 7-1. And I remember my buddy Phil and I were in that, you know, we ended up getting a nice number because Awad won it and then was second, I think, to Mecki. Anyway, that's my Arlington Million reminiscence. And of course, the new million will be at Colonial. By the way, I referenced yesterday, and we got to get some details and follow the story. The situation, the Bears were hardly dismissive of the city trying to get them to agree to stay at Soldier Field. I don't know if you saw the quotes over the weekend, but they were very open-ended about the situation, about what's going on between Arlington and the future of the Bears' home. So that I mean, not that they sold off everything at the track. So I don't. It doesn't appear that there's a path forward. But who knows? That story is not etched in stone yet.
Yeah, it's. I haven't followed much of it because it's just these stadium issues are. They're usually financial boondoggles that waste a lot of taxpayer money and very little return. So you hear all the great plans and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. All right, okay. I keep an open mind, but okay, let's see.
Well, they're talking about a $2 billion reimagining of Soldier Field with a glass dome on it, which is something. And anybody who knows, Grant Park and the whole entertainment district, running down the shoreline. I mean, Soldier Field's a big part of it. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyway, we've got about 8 minutes, Dick. Let's give everybody a winner here in this Happy Valley nightcap.
Okay, we're going to go 6 furlongs. This is a class 3. These are good, solid, hard-knocking horses, like all the Happy Valley horses. We've got a full gate of 12. And a whole bunch of them have early speed. I mean, the 2 horse has speed. The 11 has speed and will probably have to use it from out there. The 7 has shown speed. The 10, the 11. So looking at it, I was tempted to go with the 2. And this kid continues to ride well. Angus Chong was still getting 10 pounds on his apprentice allowance. So he has 13 wins, so he goes to 20. So you're looking at a real healthy situation with him in handicap racing, getting 10 pounds off. I just can't pull the trigger on him. Breaking from post 2, I believe it is, no, 4, and having speed to his inside and his outside, and where does he sit in the trip? So I'm going to go with the 5, who currently is 5-1, Midori Beauty. Just a solid horse, hasn't been winning much, been all over the place, all weather at Sha Tin, racing at Sha Tin. This is his Happy Valley debut. Lyle Ewitson will be in the irons from post 3. And I think we can get a trip. I think the speed can clear out. And I think we can get a trip. I hope we can get to the outside. I don't really want to be rallying up the rail, even though that can work. I'd rather be outside. And by the way, Steve, if you have the Simulcast picture on, they've lifted nearly all the restrictions now, at least at Happy Valley. So you're looking at a good, solid crowd of people there. So a lot of the COVID restrictions in Hong Kong have been lifted. And that page that pops up on the website that you have to click on to, the latest restrictions, they're much fewer than before. So it's nice to see fans back and crowd noise and sharing and things like that. So hopefully they'll be cheering for number 5, Midori Beauty. I'm going to most of my wage is going to be a win bet. And then there's nothing creative underneath other than the 2 and 3. So I'm going to go 2-3 over the 5. And then just as a smaller act of protection, 10-11 over the 5. But the main bet is 5-win, 2-3 over the 5, protect and exactus.
Very good. All right.
We're just hoping that the speed shows up and the 5 gets a trip, which she seems to have the finishing kick to do so. And it's his Happy Valley debut, but, you know, it's a big deal, but it's not that big a deal, and I don't think he'll be much affected by it. And he does have some really good races at Sha Tin, both on all weather and on turf. So he's I think 5-1 at the moment.
5-1 currently, and it, you know, there's a name. I mean, we've mentioned Lyle Houston, but we really haven't don't know too much. It's not a in that colony. What know anything about him that's noteworthy?
As far as I know, young kid from South Africa.
Nice.
And his main man is Doug White, and they've combined for a lot of wins already at the meet. This race, he's riding for Chris So, and Chris is having a real good year with 17 wins from 171 starters. I mean, that's 10% and a lot of placing. So Chris Sosborn doing well, Hewitson doing okay, and just a good, solid young rider that it's kind of made his mark here. You know, it's hard. And for the trainers, it's real hard because the trainers are under a microscope. They have to have a certain number of wins in a 3-year period or they lose their license. So when you come to Hong Kong, 15 is the break-even point. Anything below 15 for 3 years, you're probably just going to be not licensed again, and you're gonna know that. So you know, you're a trainer, you want to be 20 for the year, and you're a jock. The good thing with the jockeys is there's just fewer riders that are licensed. So with big fields, you do get business. 14 horses at Sha Tin, 12 at Happy Valley, and so that works out. Now, one other thing, Steve. The rider of number one is Hugh Bowman. And Hugh Bowman is now riding in Hong Kong. And you see his name, and obviously he's a real good rider. And it's only a couple of years ago that Hugh Bowman won 25 Group 1 stake races on Winks.
Yep. Yep.
So I was like, oh, yeah, that Hugh Bowman.
That Hugh Bowman.
it's just kind of funny to see him over there. And I know they raising the weight allowance, not allowance, but the range that the top of the handicap is now 135. So if, you know, if you're a rider that can make, let's say that the lowest is 122, you're still looking at 8 out of 12 horses in this race and stuff like that. So if you're a lightweight, yeah, there's business for you. But if you need to carry extra pounds, it doesn't hurt you as much, especially if you're a Hugh Bowman and probably getting on good horses.
Just looking at, looked up a little bit, Lyle Hewitson, 25 years old, and had had won three titles in South Africa already by like 23, and I guess he's kind of the Trevor McCarthy of Australasia. It seems like he's had his share of career interruptions, and interesting. How about that? And here's a note. And look at Chuck. Chuck, you're unbelievable. Chuck Simon weighing in too. In fact, I got to call Chuck. Chuck, text me. I was going to reach out to you for a visit. So pencil yourself in for later this morning. Adam Bowman is apparently his brother. Did we know that? How about that?
No.
The kid in Philly. How about that?
That would not have connected those
there
two.
There you go. Good
despite
job.
Despite the last night.
There you go. Especially right now, the way things, you know, between all these the siblings, coming over to ride. Listen, the money's better here than anywhere. Almost anywhere. So the opportunity to come to the U.S. And make a living. We're basically post time. 9-2 now on Midori Beauty. I don't think we got a light yet, do we? No, not yet. Not yet. Chuck is not that Chuck doesn't listen regularly, but I know Chuck is tuning in because his man Skiff Dog, Tom Skiffington, is we're minutes away from a Skiffington appearance. which are always noteworthy. One of the great, not just one of the great horsemen ever, but one of the great characters in the game's storied history. They are. There's your five. There's Midori Beauty. Yeah.
It looks like Donegal silks.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, by the way, speaking of Austral Asia and familiar silks, I can't. It's impractical to have a visit with Jack Wolf live. So later this afternoon, we will tape a segment with Jack Wolf. I reached out to Jack for some potential to visit to talk about Reincarnate and the Starlight Exacta in the Sham, and he's in Australia where he's in the Magic Millions next week.
No kidding.
Yeah, he's got that. I haven't seen that anybody wrote about it, but next Thursday they've got three horses that they're tied into. So we're going to have we'll tape a conversation this afternoon. It'll be Thursday morning when I talk to Jack, and then I'll run it on tomorrow's show.
Nice, and that's a great time to go. I've thought of doing that. It's middle of summer in northern Australia. It's hot. It's by the beach. The sale is fantastic.
It's right up Jack Wolf's alley.
Yeah, it certainly is.
You got the Jack, summer's in Saratoga and summer's in Australia if he wants. He's the greatest. He is the greatest. We're just about set. Let's pull up a little audio from Hong Kong and the nightcap at the Valley where it's happy. And Dick has put us on the five. And I don't know why I'm not, this is bad. Why am I not getting, I'm having trouble pulling up the audio, Dick. And there we go.
So it's being fed.
No, I know. I can't tell you why.
Well, we're sitting fifth on the rail, so we got four in front of us duking it out. And so far, not a bad trip.
Well, and
now we just got shuffled back a little bit.
Yeah,
there,
just a tiny bit. That three
one
that you
horse,
talked about, Humble Star, right? Somebody just blew the turn, and we're trying to. It's so hard when they the way they head on.
Three's the big one.
Yeah, three is just not. He's not relenting. Although we got some chasers.
Over the top, four over the top.
Wow, Armor Eagle 11-1. There's your man, Zach Burton.
From post 12.
How about that?
I circled post 12, and that was last I looked at him. Zach's second winner of the night, and Jamie Richards is interesting. He was the dominant trainer in New Zealand, and he has moved everything to Hong Kong and is, doing well. Will do better as the season goes on, but it's a nice win for him, and post 12, all the speed set up. It just didn't set up for me.
I think the 10, How Deep Is Your Love, is going to be second here at 2-1. So 4, 10, and then inside was the 3. Did the 3 hang on?
I'm not sure.
Well, and by the way, once again, oh, I see why the now I see what happened to the audio. The six actually, yep, exponential at 43-1. That humble star, the three, once again, like last week, Dick, kind of belying the concept. Boy, the six, and I tell you what. The six beat the gate. That was some jump that that exponential got to take the early lead and to hold on for third, basically setting the pace was a yeoman's effort. But when we were in the running of this, Humble Star was 10-1, and then when they got the last refresh up, had dropped to 7-1. So I don't want to hear how. Our pools only in America. I mean, here's the biggest pools in the world, and you had a price drop from 10-1 to 7-1 during the running.
Well, the answer is if everybody, including you and me, are allowed to bet at the last second, then
yeah,
the market is going to change at the last second.
Exactly. I mean, no matter where we are. In the world, because you know, here 70% of the pool is accrued in the last 3 minutes. 70% of the pool, and that last flash, the last two flashes, even you know lately when they are you know pulling, they're hitting the refresh and pulling money from the system as fast as they can, so that you know to try to inhibit. Volatile movement, but it's still the last flash is always, you know, going to bring in a flood, especially with the you know the automated wagering. We can't send everybody home happy. We'll talk to Rich Eng tomorrow. If I'm not mistaken, 4-10-6-7 officially. Is it Year of the Horse? It's Year of the Horse coming, right?
Oh boy, yeah, that's coming up in a couple weeks.
I think it is, and so we'll have that card, which is always fun. One of the high, right? That's one of the biggest. Is it the Year of the Horse or the year, or is it the year of the, or was it the Year of the Horse?
It might have been.
Hold on here.
Was the Year of the Horse?
I think you're right. I think yeah. Yeah, it was actually, and so it's the Year of the Rabbit. The Year of the Rabbit.
Right.
Wait a minute. Now, hold on. Let me see here. Let me go to the old horses. 2023 is the Year of the Rabbit. Okay. So we will get
my dog. My dog likes to chase him out of here. So...
That's going to be a good year for him, Dick. I appreciate it, and.
It'd be good. Look forward to listening to Tony and Chuck and everyone else the rest of the broadcast.
I appreciate it. There it is. Seth Merrow, too, later.
Yes.
Got Seth. We got, what do we got today? Gulfstream, and you got Action at Tampa as things kind of pick up. A very, very limited assortment of opportunities for people. The first couple of days of the week, as we are now, we're fully into winter, although you wouldn't know it looking outside. It's bright and sunny and beautiful, and there's not a speck of snow, as opposed to what's going on the West Coast. We've got to monitor that into the weekend, the rain in California. Let's take a top of the hour break. Thanks, Dick, and we will come back with Tom Skiffington. Pay tribute to Virginia Kraft Payson, who had her hand in a lot over the last half century. The story, there's so many good obituaries. The one by T.D. Thornton is terrific, and TDN, and they tell the story about her husband kind of got caught up. They went to see Secretariat as tourists, essentially, she and her husband, her first husband. And I think first, she was married a half full of times. And they went to the sale, I think phasing, and they found themselves caught up. They were in the front row, and they bought a horse. Ended up being a maniac, but that was the initial foray into horses. And she, after his passing, she stayed on and had a important and long running influence on the game. So Tom Skiffington will join us next. I talked to you about the sale, and I got to get back to that. We'll talk to Tony Black today, as I mentioned, because Sid was traveling back, might have been affected by that slowdown this morning. Computer glitching for the FAA, problematic. Everything was grounded for a few hours. And I got something related, not related to that, but something came out of yesterday's visit. I told Tina that I had Brett Calhoun, and we talked about what went on at Sanibel, the tragedy that has befallen, you know, the island. And I imagine Captiva as well, right? It had to have been as devastating for Captiva. And I said to Tina, you know, maybe, you know, should we consider looking there? I mean, we'd love to go. She loves it there particularly. That was my first time. And I said, should we consider, you know, maybe looking at getting something, you know? It's like that incident that, for those of you that have read The World According to Garp, right? When Garp, they're looking at the house, and the plane, the small private plane crashes into the house. And Garp says, we have to buy this house, honey. What's the chances of a plane ever hitting it again? What's the chances of, I mean, it's a once-in-a-generation storm, right? I mean, we're only going to live another, I don't know, 20 years, I guess, 25. So maybe, but Tina said, I don't want to take advantage of other people's misery, and I appreciate that. But I do have to tell you the story of taking advantage of Southwest's misery, because they're giving flights away, and I booked 9 flights. My travel through April is locked in. I put together a crazy, crazy trip. Let's take a break. Hour 2, Skiffington, next.
The latest racing news. Racing fans, don't miss
the latest racing news. It's At The Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically?